connected.
Listen, fellas and girls.
Download the Nigeria Info mobile app on iOS and Google Play Store. Join the conversation and stay connected. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. The conversation is just a click away. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Will Nigeria follow the winds of change that swept Zambia, Kenya during their presidential elections? Will a seemingly minority politician right here in the country redefine politics as we've come to know it in Nigeria? Can Nigerian youths change the political narrative just like their counterparts in Zambia? Well, how much more can the aviation industry take before it possibly collapses? God forbid I can hear somebody saying right about now. But should we be worried about more hikes in the prices of air flights? And what is the solution to these problems? Well, all of these and more will get us talking on the show this evening. It's my cue to welcome you to another super bumper package of The Newsroom, brought to you by, of course, The Newsroom of Nigeria Info. My name is Ufoma Egbamono. It's a pleasure to be here. My partner in crime, Aoga Obo, is not here today, so I've decided to substitute him with another partner of crime, or a partner in crime, I should say, Yvonne. Oh, hi, for Yvonne, a very good evening to you.
For my good evening to you, but I'm not your partner in crime. I'm not a criminal.
I will choose not to say anything. But let's just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. Guys, remember that, of course, this is 99.3 Nigeria Info. We're streaming live. You can watch us on our Facebook and our YouTube page. The Facebook is Nigeria Info 99.3 and YouTube is Nigeria Info FM. Well, let's get into the thick of the action because, of course, we've got a very wonderful conversation for you this evening. Let's start with our very first topic. We'll be talking about, you know, the aftermath of the Kenyan election and what it might portend for Nigeria come 2023. Well, the elections in Zambia in August 2021 and Kenya just a few days or weeks ago can be described as, of course, a bit of a wave of change. In Zambia, young people came out in their numbers and voted out the incumbent president. They elected, of course, the opposition leader in a landslide victory. In Kenya, former deputy president William Ruto led his of coalition right there to narrowly beat, you could argue, a perpetual presidential campaigner, Raila Odinga. And of course, in both countries, the electorate chose to cast their lots with political outsiders, if you might want to look at these people, you know, from that angle. And a lot of Nigerians, youths especially, you know, have been talking about the fact that maybe, just maybe, they could replicate that scenario from Zambia and Kenya right here in Nigeria come February 2023. Question would be, here in the country, food inflation, high cost of prices, the ASUU strike, the terrible currency we have at the moment, and of course its lack of little value, maybe some of the big issues, you know, that will, of course, decide the election next year. Not to forget ethnicity, tribalism, religion. Yes, not to forget all of that. So we'll try to get some bit of perspective as it concerns what happened in Kenya and if there's a possibility of replicating that here in Nigeria. Even as a lot of Nigerian youths, you know, are looking at the Labour Party and its presidential candidate that's talking about Peter Obi as possibly a candidate that can change the fortunes of the country. Well, to discuss this with us, we have a Kenyan who's also a businesswoman as well as a PR person. She's also the CEO of Swan Maison. Her name is Marianne Maynard. Marianne, a very good evening to you. It's almost 8 o'clock, I should think, in Kenya. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing very well. And of course, we've got a Nigerian this time around who's a marketing professional, but she's lived in Kenya a long time, 7 years to be precise. Irene Nwankwa is also joining us on the newsroom this evening. Irene, a very good evening to you. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening. Very good evening to you.
I can see that big smile. Okay, Irene, I'll come to you in a bit. Let me start with Marianne. Marianne, I do know that today court proceedings actually started out there in Kenya. Odinga is challenging the election results. I also know for a fact that 4 of the 7 electoral commissioners actually refused to endorse the outcome of, the elections, alleging that, the way the final results came out, a bit, in their words, opaque. What's the situation with the Supreme Court and, of course, all of those challenges?
So today, Raila petitioned and went to the Supreme Court, and they're presenting their findings, which seem to be quite a lot. It's actually a truck, apparently we saw in the newspaper, today. So they have 7 days to submit and then wait for some days for the Supreme Court to get back to him contesting the elections. And we also have other people who are also contesting the election results.
Mm. Well,
yes, we have the 4 who stepped aside, who refused to be a part of the results.
Go ahead, Marianne.
Hello? Oh, sorry, it went quiet. So we also have the 4 IBC commissioners who refused to be a part of the results, which were announced last week on Monday, and they had their own press conference, while the chairperson for the Electoral Board Commission was announcing the results. So they're part of the team that has given in their findings in regards to contesting against the president-elect, William Ruto.
Okay.
So that's where we are at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, part of Odinga's petition, he's calling the chairperson of course, the Electoral Boundaries Commission, Wafula Chebukati. I hope I pronounced that very well. He's calling him a rogue. He also alleges that he was involved, a plan to actually secure a fraudulent result. But let's look at it from this way. Odinga is from the Luo tribe out there in Kenya, and they've not had someone, or you guys have not had someone from that tribe as your president. Now, I do know for a fact that when you come to Nigeria, I mentioned it, in my intro, ethnicity plays a huge role, in determining who becomes president. Please tell us, is that the same thing out there in Kenya?
Yes, very deeply. And it has been for a long while with the 2 leading tribes, leading in terms of majority in numbers, which is the Kikuyu and the Luo. So the Kikuyu have had a president from the onset. The first president was Jomo Kenyatta, was Kikuyu, and the next president was Kalenji Moi, and then the next president was Kibaki, is Kikuyu, and now Uhuru Kenyatta is the son of Jomo Kenyatta. So for a long while, we've had a lot of challenge in terms of tribal, especially between the Luo and the Kikuyu. And you could see that how it played itself in the 2007 elections, at the results where we actually went into a violent station until January 2008, quite some time. And Raila was contesting the result, and it was terrible. A lot of people lost their lives, and it was very contentious between the Luo and the Kikuyu. So part of the last year, Raila Uhuru partnered and had a handshake. And I think the thought behind it was to bring the 2 majority tribes together and unite them as elections come forward. But at the same space, Ruto, who was also campaigning, partnered with the Kikuyu. And so that also divided the Kikuyu, because there are Kikuyus who are not in favor of Raila, irrespective of who bringing it in. So we had quite a large number of Kikuyu, which is actually the largest tribe, split. And that is not what Raila expected. He thought a lot of the Kikuyus would actually vote him in. So unfortunately, it's been quite tribal in this country, especially between the Kikuyu and the Luo. But now the handshake, I seem to see it's been quite calm. We were quite more united this time, irrespective of what happened. There was less stone throwing. There was not really much violence. Mm. But unfortunately, tribalism is deeply seated in this country.
Okay, I'll get to you in a bit. Let me bring Irene into the conversation right now. Irene, first things first. Having lived in Kenya, and of course you understand a bit of Kenyan politics, how would you assess the 2022 elections out there in Kenya? And do you think that Nigeria would possibly in 2023 witness, you know, that kind of situation?
I've been hearing about these parallels, and before I come to the parallels, Kenyan elections, like Mariana said, are very, very tribal, regardless of who is the front man. For starters, that handshake, you know, while it was pleasing to some, it was really offensive, you know, to many, and, you know, formed at the end of the day the crux of what it, to some extent, you know, made this election difficult for Ruto and almost, you know, impossible for Raila. I personally believe that if Raila had gone, you know, if he had not gone this handshake route, if he had gone, you know, the activist route, and because he was gaining some ground, you know, and gaining, you know, legitimacy amongst especially the young people. Mm. And if they had stayed that course and continued to keep, you know, the Mudavadis and co as their front people, I believe that they would be closer to what we are trying to achieve with the Peter Obi movement than what is obtainable today. So what is obtainable today, you know, I'm sorry to say, looks to me a lot more like PDP versus APC. Looks to me more like people who have been in government. You can never call Ruto or Raila saints, not by any, you know, not by any stretch of the imagination, not by any of the corruption cases they've been implicated in, not by any legacy of any, they don't have any history of any good or excellent governance, so okay, to say, to their names, the way that we would say with Peter Obi. And so, you know, I'm not very quick to draw that parallel. You know, I'm very quick to say that, listen, these are old dogs who have lost out of in very different, you know, political consulting in very many different political negotiations, you know, and have realigned. Nobody's different in the election, in this election. And I mean, think about what the prevailing campaigns were. It was dynasties versus hustlers, you know.
Yep.
It's still the same thing. When we bring it to what we are trying to achieve, you know, by being obedient, what we are trying to achieve is a disruption in the political system. What we are trying to achieve, you know, is preventing the bitter lesson of it's not your turn. So everybody has the key jingle and the key mantra this season has been, you know, my turn, this person's turn, that person's turn. We're tired of turns. If, you know, Tinubu at the age of allegedly 70 is saying that, you know, 2022, me, this prime of my youth, 2022 is his turn. What is my turn? Something has to change. Something has to give. And for the first time since, you know, the IBB Abacha times when, you know, NAN became compromised and the youth voice became the voice of money. For the very first time, we're seeing, you know, youth action that is focused on, you know, the current sufferings and the things that we need to change today. We're seeing, you know, people, young people who are saying, we don't want these old people to keep making these decisions for us. They are fine, their children are fine. Tinubu's children graduated and, you know, they bought them $2 million houses and for who's
allegedly
going to buy me a $2 million
allegedly
house, you know? Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly,
I have to know? Add that. Yeah.
I didn't read in the paper. Then, I would like somebody to even allegedly buy me a house, even
yourself, you know. Irene, you're looking for too much. But quickly, let's. By the way, I think I failed to mention this in my intro. Irene is actually obedient. She's a big supporter of Peter Obi. I think I needed to actually put that up, but she's doing a good job of, you know, trying to sell her candidate. As much as we're not campaigning, because it's not time yet, Irene. You know, so as much as you say there's no similarity, and the Labour Party movement is about disrupting, you know, critics will argue, and there are a lot of people who would argue, maybe rightly so, that what are you disrupting? Peter Obi is part of the establishment. He is a former governor, two-term former governor. He was the vice presidential candidate of the PDP just 3-4 years ago. So what is different? What do you say to those people?
So what we say to those people is that, you know, candidates, and it's not, I think it needs to be clear that it's not about Peter Obi.
Okay.
It's about credible hope. It's about, you know, people who, we're not looking for novices. So nobody's looking for a Donald Trump, right? No, people who have never held political office before. Everybody understands that it would be tough to achieve in Nigeria of today. But we're looking for people who can pass the standard of the bare minimum. Today, we have people like Peter Obi who can pass that standard, who can, you know, go through a government with minimal scandal, who has bright ideas, who is eloquent, who can deliver change, who has shown that they can deliver change. And so while, you know, they understand the system, we know from their precedents that, you know, they are less likely, you know, to corrupt the system and more likely to add, you know, to the increment that we're looking for, the incremental change we're looking for in Nigeria.
But there's the argument that there are really no significant, my memory fails me here, no significant achievement. You know, a lot of critics have said, hey, what exactly are those achievements that we can point out and say, oh, Peter Obi did this in his 8 years as governor of Anambra State? To be clear, I am not of that school of thought, you know, but those questions have come and they will keep coming. In fact, even in large quantities, if you might want to use that, when the campaigns start, what do you say to those people?
One of the things I say, and I always say this in humor, but I really mean it. When Peter Obi assumes power, he will fix education the way that he has fixed it in Anambra.
Yes, you're so confident.
The way that... Yes, we are confident. Today, I mean, when we look at, you know, educational results, education, which today has shown as the single biggest, you know, driver of social mobility, of lifting people out of poverty in our context today, when we see that, you know, this guy has significantly improved education in his region, we want that kind of change. We want to see empowerment of small to medium businesses. We want to see, you know, a more economy-oriented government. These are things that he has promoted time and time over. We don't expect that he's going to go there now and change, because, you know, and he has done this despite, you know, the challenges that he has met. So, you know, like they say, the reward for hard work is more work. We want to bestow on him this more work in reward for, you know,
the work he's done
little
before.
Hard work that we told him.
Okay, to do, yes. Hold on the thoughts. I'll come to you in a bit. Marianne, quickly, my colleague has got a question for you. It concerns, of course, the electoral umpire, the head of the electoral umpire out there in Kenya.
That's right, Ofoma. It has been stated that Wafula Chebukati, the chairperson of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, may have been compromised. Now, why are there these allegations? And which of the candidates was stated to have compromised him?
So allegedly, I will use a former's word.
You better.
I'm learning very quickly. Actually, so that day when we had the results, it was quite interesting to watch it, because we were supposed to have it at 3 p.m., which is your 1 p.m. And we're all sitting there in front of the TV. Nothing was happening until like 5. And there's actually, then we suddenly, two screens came up as we were watching the TV, and another press conference going on, and that's the other commissioners who have to say. And at the same time, on the same TV screen, Chebukati was going to announce it. Quite interesting. So it appears, if you look at the constitution for the commissioners, that you must have a majority. The commissioners, all of them, you must have a majority number in terms of the counting. Mm. And that, and the commissioners were seven. Four stepped aside and they refused to sign on the papers. And Chebukati went on and announced the results. So under the constitution, that should not have happened.
Mm.
Under the constitution, not under Marianne. And that's where everything started. And in 2017, Chebukati had similar allegations where apparently he was compromised and what he stated should not have been in our other elections. So it appears this has been, this is not the first time. And right now, even as a Supreme Court case is going on, there are people who are saying if, well, this case is going on, Chebukati must step aside for going against the oath.
Hmm.
So it's allegedly that he was compromised by the party of the president-elect.
Mm.
Because of what he gave, the responses were in his favor.
Okay, well, this, yeah. Well, this is an ongoing conversation. Definitely would have more as it concerns the Kenyan election and, of course, the challenges in court. But quickly, Irene, let me come back to you on the Peter Obi movement and, of course, drawing parallels or little similarities from the Kenyan experience. Tribalism, ethnicity, religion, all of these play into, like, you know, Marianne talked about in Kenya. It's a huge factor also here in Nigeria. In fact, I remember clearly I was a guest on one of our programs on the day the APC had their primary. Okay, the following day, the following morning, I was a guest on one of my colleagues' show, you know, and I said that morning that what annoys me, you know, about the 2023 general election is that it's going to be hugely about tribalism, because, you know, as of that morning, it appeared that we had a Peter Obi, an Igbo man, you know, we had an Atiku Abubakar and Hausa Fulani, and then, of course, Bola Tinubu was emerging, you know, as the APC candidate. And for me, it just felt like we're going back to the 60s and 70s and all that nonsensical tribalism that, you know, have characterized our elections. However, we can't rule out the fact that, you know, the dominant parties, the APC and the PDP, you know, have this stronghold where you could argue the Labour Party doesn't have. And that's why every time, you know, they talk about structure. While I think Peter Obi will possibly do well in most urban cities, how is the movement looking at those rural areas that do not have DSTV, that possibly cannot, do not have internet to listen to Nigeria Info if they are not in Lagos, you know, or other radio stations and TV? How do you plan to ensure that this movement gets to those nook and cranny?
So you do have a point. Tribalism and religion play a very strong role. If I want to compare it to Kenya, I would, for the first time, I would publicly say that I feel like it's worse in Kenya, and I'll explain why.
Wow.
In Nigeria, the more educated a person is, the more they are willing to let go of, you know, their, a little bit of their tribal misgivings, you know, ethnic misgivings, and work with others. In Kenya, I don't think that education per se changes that, you know, education exposure. I've seen it in the most ridiculous of places. When I first moved to Kenya and someone told me, no, you guys don't do tribalism like we do, I thought they were really joking, because I didn't know anybody that did tribalism as bad as we did. But, you know, it's really something deep in Kenya. It really is, you know. That's one angle. But then we have a dimension that is not as pronounced in Kenya. So in Kenya, most people, I mean, over 80% of the population is Christian. So, you know, the religious dynamic doesn't really show up. Maybe Mombasa, you know, but the religious dynamic doesn't really show up. Mm. In Nigeria, it is a cause worth fighting for. And so, you know, I think that, for instance, the religious fight is going to be stronger than the tribal fights in this 2023 election.
Mm.
And simply because, you know, and simply because also the easiest way to distribute messaging, actually anything really across Africa is religion. Because thanks to the missionaries, you know, thanks to, you know, mission networks, these are established networks of reaching people. You know, people in the village are more likely to hear about Peter Obi from their pastors, from listening to Yedepo's tapes. These things, they travel very far. They move like Coca-Cola, as they say, you know. So they're more likely to hear these things from their pastors, you know, as than, you know, they are from
traditional or social media.
Yes, traditional or social media. And, you know, I also think that it is bit by bit. I find that Nigerians, in general, people like to have something to fight for. So the other aspect is that, you know, and this is where the tribal aspect comes in. You see, the people who support Peter Obi do it for several reasons. I will not claim to know all the reasons. I'll tell you what mine are. One, because I believe that, you know, he is one of the best people for the job. But more importantly, because we need to have a sense of justice in this country. It is the one thing that I strongly believe makes us all invested in the Nigerian project. For the longest time, you know, and we can see it in the way that the Southeast is gearing up for elections. You know, for the longest time, everybody just sat still. In fact, I remember that at the point to get to ginger the Southeast for GEJ, it took a lot of Ebele, you know, our
Azikiwe,
and all of that.
So, yeah.
Azikiwe, exactly. So, you know, and now not only is there, you know, a clear justification, you can see that, you know, from the beginning, everybody said, and you know, it goes back to PDP. Everybody said, oh, but by PDP's, everybody was looking out for the bright stars that would come out. Mm. People were looking at Tambuwa, people were looking at Peter Obi, people were looking at several people, you know. And everybody said, oh, you know, but it needs to come from the east, from the south, because of, you know, the rotation, because of the constitution and all of that. And people started to clamor. And then we started to get, you know, feedback that was, you know, from where I stand, unjust. And so this started to give people, you know, a sense of reason to fight. Because why is it that at this time, you know, their zoning constitution is still put aside? And, you know, the funny thing is, every time that they've put aside this zoning constitution, it has not augured well for PDP. You cannot preach that it is us all, we are all in this together, we're all in this together, and then now come out and now start pushing candidates aside and saying, oh, you know, it's now what the North wants. So think about it. The whole South, what happens? What is our... If we did 2015 because that's what the North was, if we did 2019 because that's what the North was, are we going to do 2023 because that's what the North was?
Well,
can we really survive in an unjust nation?
Sadly, we don't have so much time, and you really didn't answer my question, but we'd have enough time, you know, subsequently to do this. But Irene, I'm not going to let you go without asking you this question. Please, could you give me an answer in, say, 30 seconds or 1 minute? A lot of persons who support Peter Obi have been accused of being rude, of being, bullies, you know, they don't listen to others, they don't want to hear whatever any other person is saying, and that it's your way or the highway. How do you respond to that?
So rudeness, well, there's no part of the constitution that says that rudeness precludes me from a voice or my vote. So, well, you know, people are incensed. You know, so far never tire you. You don't tire me. You know, things are increasing every day. Why will I not be rude? Goat meat was 3,000 naira a kilo. Now it's 3,500. Now it's going, you know, it's crazy. How will I be nice? But I do say that, you know, bullying is not right, and that, you know, while we strive to maintain discourse, we also need to be realistic. Would there be people who, for whom, you know, there is no regulation? Yes, we are sorry ahead of time. At least Peter Obi has been begging on our behalf. But for the rest of us, please endure with us and join us.
All right. Irene is a marketing professional. And of course, we're also joined by Marianne Maina, who's a PR person and a big businesswoman. Trust me, she has a whole lot of money. I'm going to come and start asking her for money after this show. But ladies, thank you very much for joining us on the newsroom. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, quickly, we're moving to the next part of the conversation quickly, and it's got to do with the aviation sector. I was just telling
you were Yvonne.
Yvonne.
I've forgotten my name.
I'm sorry.
Because these beautiful women.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
You know, I was telling Yvonne just before we got into the studio how much expensive paying for flights actually are right now, such that I'm planning to go home Port Harcourt soon. Blah, I go stay one extra week, pass as I plan out. I don't go pay all that money, finish.
Utilize it.
Jesus. Anyway, it is really not a laughing matter. Mm-hmm. And it's going from bad to worse, such that even the local and international operators are literally suffering. We've got an aviation expert, Wale Shadari, who's joining us. Wale, apologies for keeping you waiting. We had to, you know, do what we needed to do. Hopefully, we'll bring you back again, either on this show or other shows, you know, to talk more on this because we do not have so much time. But quickly, what are some of these challenges the aviation sector is going through that you think the government, where exactly does the government need to prioritize to see if we can salvage the situation?
Thank you very much. I actually enjoyed the discussion by the ladies. And, very brilliant discussion. And I also like the way you were able to put questions across. That was fine.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, to get back to the aviation industry. The aviation industry is in serious crisis, and it is not actually limited to Nigeria. The global aviation industry is going through a lot. If you remember, we just went through COVID-19, and most countries and most airlines are yet to recover. Then we now had the Russia-Ukraine crisis that has really, really affected a lot of things. And like they say, there's no local aviation. Aviation is global. Mm. But bringing it down to Nigeria, a lot of factors are responsible for what we are going through now. Examples, issues like Forex, issues like multiple taxations, issues like aviation fuel, jet fuel, and so many other issues that have combined to threaten the existence of so many airlines. But be that as it may, government has actually done some things to help the airlines. We remember that they were giving bailouts during the COVID-19, but it was so small, about 5 billion naira. We also look at other areas government has also helped, but this is just like a drop in an ocean. What government needs to do, the issue of Forex is very, very important, because if you look at it, it is difficult to assess foreign exchange now. So what most people do, or most airline operators do, is to resort to the black market, which in the long run does not do them any good. So we also look at the cost of aviation fuel, which has gone up from 200 naira per liter to almost 900 naira per liter now. It's quite difficult for any airline anywhere to break even, not to talk of making profit. So if you look at it, aviation fuel takes about 30%, or used to take 30% of airline revenue, but now is taking over 50% of airline revenue. Apart from the scarcity, is so expensive. And you cannot blame the airline for trying to raise airfare from what it used to be, 35,000 naira now, to almost 100,000, or even in some cases, you get it as high as 150,000 naira, 200,000 to travel from Abuja to Lagos. What is the minimum wage? What, how much do people really earn to begin to travel by air? Invariably, people will resort to road travel, even with its attendant risk. But I doubt how many people can really take to road air travel these days. And that is why you're having fewer people taking to air travel. How many people can really afford that? So the aviation industry is going through a lot of crises now. And before now, we used to have 8 airlines, the scheduled airlines, but because Dana is grounded, Aero has voluntarily suspended operations. So the aircraft in service now are very, very
smaller.
They are smaller. So it has really, really reduced. So that also puts a lot of pressure on the airline. And it's quite unfortunate that with 8 airlines that we have, the number of aircraft in their service is less than 50 aircraft. So you also look at there's no way the traffic is going to be reduced when you compare it to what we had in 2019, 2018 before COVID. So if care is not taken, most of the airlines will close shop. But surprisingly, while some are planning to close shop, some other airlines have their applications within Nigeria Civil Aviation Authority. There's nothing wrong. All over the world, airlines come and go. In the United States, we have many airlines that come and go. It's not a problem. But it is a problem when these airlines go and we don't have a replacement for them. They also cause them unemployment, because one airline can employ at least 100 people. They take 100 people away from the labor market. So airlines are a veritable source of employment or vehicle for employment because of the number of people they employ at a go.
Mm-hmm.
But that be that as it may, the airlines, like I say, the aviation industry is really, really going through a lot of issues. And even internationally, airfares are rising astronomically by over 150% to 200%. And that is not far-fetched. The reason is not far-fetched in the sense that most of the foreign airlines have their
Sadly, Wole, I might have to cut you there. We have run totally out of time. But you know what we're going to do? We'll most likely start the newsroom next week with this conversation. Most likely.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And that's our cue to wrap up the show at this point in time. We'll be back again next week, Monday. Thanks to everyone who's been a part of the show.